What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we're back with Giants versus Dodgers, our semi-regular check-in about the team that the Giants are chasing and may never catch, but at the pace that the Dodgers are.
I don't think you guys are going to catch us in this era.
So we'll talk about the World Series. It was a very classic World Series. I watched a lot of this World Series compared to last year's Yankees and Dodgers World Series, which there were some good games, but this one was way more classic. Seven gamer, of course. We'll talk about the off seasons and how each team is doing. You guys got a closer today.
We did, and we needed it. Lord knows we needed the closer. So I ran the numbers last year. We actually would have had somewhere, because Tanner Scott blew 10 saves by himself. He led the league. Uh-huh. And then the bullpen blew another 10. So that's 20 possible victories we could have had. We ended up with 95 wins through the season. So you're looking at a possible 115-win season for us had the bullpen not collapsed, and specifically Tanner Scott. So, which was a horrible investment by Andrew Friedman, which we're going to get to later on, because he made quite a few blunders, including one of an ex-Giant that we invested a lot of money and was under the Mendoza scale.
I do have a take on that, and when we get there, because even though Conforto was not good, and I told you he probably wasn't going to be good, the ability that you guys to take those shots is
amazing.
It's a fantastic thing. So you guys got Diaz. We'll talk about that as we get to the offseason, because that's a big one. But let's go back to the World Series. I was sitting here in this very chair during the long extra inning game. And at some point, it was going so late into the game that which game was that? Was that game three?
That was game three. Yeah.
So, you know, I actually started on my couch. I had my iPad up. I was watching the Warriors Dodgers Blue Jays on the iPad, and I'm just kind of following, and I'm like, wow, this game's not over. Came into my office. The kid was like, hey, you know, we're playing NBA 2K, jump on. So I jumped on. I had the game on my computer, was playing on the TV. And at some point, we were just like, we've been playing for like an hour and a half, and this game's still going on. And then there were warning track shots that we thought ended the game that didn't end the game.
Specifically,
Dalton Varsho's just going back and crashing into the fence a couple different times. And then finally Freddie Freeman takes it out. But that was like, you know, I did like three different things during the span of 18 innings.
Oh, it was two games.
Yeah. And there was a conversation that was happening, because I believe Shohei was supposed to start the next game. And so somebody said, I was talking to, you know, people who are in their young to mid 20s, and they said, do you think Shohei warms up? And I said, no, because he's the one guy you don't want to change up his routine. Like, he's very specific to his routine, had just coming off of the elbow injury. Like, he needs to like only worry about tomorrow. But I said, you know who will warm up? I guarantee you, Yamamoto. Now, he didn't actually go in the game.
No.
But he did warm up. And even before you guys won it and he was the MVP, I was like, that dude is the man. Just the mere fact of him warming up. Look, this is the closest comparison, I think, that we've had to something like what Madison Bumgarner did.
I knew you were going to put the Giants over somehow in this conversation.
11 years ago. No, but I'm comparing
it. I agree with you.
That's what it made me think about was, man, this guy is like, even if this hurts me down the line, which it generally does with these pitchers, which is why you savor these moments. It's like you always have that. He will always have that. And I was like, that dude is the man, and he is worth every penny that you guys paid him just for warming up to say, if you need me, I can spin a few. Like that, I just thought that was maybe, that was like, take out the games and how good the games were, but that was like my favorite moment of the World Series was when he just got up to throw a few warm-up pitches. Like that dude, that was awesome.
But that's the team spirit, though. That's the team spirit, and that's one of the things that upsets me about the people that are not following the Dodgers every day like I am. This idea that they're this, like, juggernaut, multi-million-dollar team, multi-billion-dollar team, and this idea that they were handed a championship, right? It's not true at all. I mean, we didn't even take the division. We had to go through the wild card, and we had a lot of injuries. And the same thing that happened last year is like these guys are very proud to wear Dodger blue. That's what they do, you know. And I think there's this culture that I'm liking, by the way. That is kind of like, it doesn't matter who you are, when you throw on the Dodger uniform, you come to play, you know. Mm-hmm. And what I like is that the multi-billionaires are kind of setting the example. I mean, you talked about Yamamoto going out there, $307 million for 12 years. He's pitching. He was amazing. That inspires a kid like Will Klein. Will Klein ate up 4 innings in that game. He had never pitched more than 35 pitches a game in his entire career. And on that game, because we're running out of pitchers, I mean, Rojas was getting ready to come in. I'll be honest with you. Roberts has got on record saying he was going to punt the game because they ran out of pitchers, you know, and that's when Yam was like, well, fuck it. I'll go in there. But Will Klein gave him 4 scoreless innings. And that's amazing to me. And what I like about this World Series is that you had Dodger heroes sprinkled throughout the entire series. You know, everybody kind of contributed, including Rojas, who's like a Cinderella story.
Oh, yeah.
Bench guy got himself a year extension, $7 million, just because, you know, he was such a hero in that World Series. And he's a great leader, too. I think he's going to be molded into management eventually. But there was a concerning thing that I want to bring up to you. There was something that concerned that I noticed specifically in that game, but it's been the theme for the Dodgers. And it was very evident against the Blue Jays because the Blue Jays have a different hitting philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you notice in that game, the 18-inning game, they were going for bombs the entire time. They were not trying to get on base. And that's what made it more frustrating, because every time the Dodgers came up, they were going for the launch angle, right? And it was so – I was like, just get on base, play small ball, and that's what you do in extra innings, bunt, you know, do something. But it's frustrating because I saw it for the first time, and it's a flaw in the Dodgers team. And it's a flaw in a lot of MLB teams. Let's be real about it. But it's very, very evident with the Dodgers, and that they just don't know how to put the ball in play if they're not trying to hit bombs. And it's frustrating because that'll get you to the dance. But, there's a lot of things that happen in this series where the Dodgers won, where maybe they shouldn't have won, and I'll be the first to say that. But 9 times out of 10, it's not going to work for you all the time when you rely on slugging and just purely slugging. It's not going to work. And what do you think about that? That philosophy of just, you know, the launch angle thing and all that stuff. What do you think?
So I, originally, when we first started hearing about launch angle, it was kind of one of those things where teams are looking for the edge, right? What can we do that other teams aren't doing? What does this is a very analytical idea, right? How can philosophy change? Now, hitting home runs is not new age analytics. Hitting home runs has been day one in baseball, maybe not day one, but when you can score a run
from the 1920s and on, if you want to be heard about it.
When you can score a run with one swing of the bat, like that is the best case scenario in any sort of situation. But the idea of giving your team an opportunity to hit more of them while also saying, if we do this, we're going to strike out more. So how do you balance that? Well, if we can hit more home runs, maybe we take a little bit more of striking out. But if we don't hit as many as we want and we strike out too much, then that's going the other way. A guy when we were younger, I don't know how much you saw of him, but he played in the Bay Area a little bit, so I saw a lot of him. Dave Kingman. Dave Kingman was like, hit 40 home runs, strike out 180 times, and hit 230. And today, in today's baseball, he almost fits better than he did back in the day. So if you do it well, it is a fantastic strategy. But if you don't do it well, and by not doing it well, this is the Giants of the last 3 or 4 years, because they took that same philosophy, and in 2021, they led all of baseball in home runs. But since then, the strikeouts pile up, and they're not hitting as many home runs. So now, what does Buster Posey say? He's like, you know, those Milwaukee Brewers, they're more into base running and getting guys on base and having smart at-bats. We're going to go more towards that. And the reason why Buster can do that is because his team is not built to do what you guys can do and what the Blue Jays can do. So it really is about your personnel. And if you have three guys in your lineup who can hit 30 jacks, then that is probably the best case scenario, for a team philosophy. But if you got like six or seven guys and you got 8 home runs and 10 home runs and, 12 home, then it's just not, because you're not getting enough guys on base and then hitting those guys in to offset all of the outs you're making because people cannot make contact. So,
yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And the thing about the Jays was that they were putting the ball in play. They could hit for power. They have Bo Bichette, Vladdy could hit for power. Vladdy was out of control during the entire postseason. I mean, the guy, those tears that he had when they didn't win were well-earned, because he was amazing. To me, that was a big flaw in the Dodgers, and it's not going to stop. If you win championships, why are you going to, you're not going to fix what's not broken, right?
But yeah,
it does lead to a lot of strikeouts, like you said. I mean, Ohtani, if you watch Ohtani play every day, I mean, he had an average of like one strikeout per day, sometimes two. And it's just frustrating because you can't build innings like that. You can't, it's hard to have those innings like the Blue Jays were having throughout the postseason, where they're getting 3, 4, 5 runs in an inning because they're playing small ball. They're making contact, hit and run, bunts even. There's a lot of teams that just don't do that anymore, not even in the postseason. So it was scary at times. I mean, this World Series was very scary, man. It wasn't an easy ride whatsoever. And a lot of people say, well, the Blue Jays played better baseball. Maybe so, but the Dodgers made the moves when it counted, whether you call it luck or whatever, they made them, they got some runs when it counted, and they took the series.
To me, it was really about making the big defensive plays when it counted too. There were some, and the Blue Jays had the unfortunate base running errors, and that is where those, the game of inches or the game of, small moments really does affect it. I want to grab these two comments though. This is not me saying this. I want people to know that this is Julio Colmenares saying, are the Dodgers going back to the White House to visit that fascist pedophile next year?
It's good for business. What are you going to do? they did this year, but not all the Dodgers went, so there's that.
So, it's not a very political podcast, but we mentioned the last time that's, you have to talk about it when it's sort of about, your fan base and stuff. And, you guys had the situation with the ICE stuff that I think you guys turned around but you had let me know that it was really disappointing early on, and folks were frustrated. I do wonder if more people refuse to do that just because they know that the culture and the fan base is like, hey man, like we were unhappy about how some of this was handled last year.
Yeah. No, and it's hard. It's hard to be a fan. It's hard to be an activist like myself, you know, somebody who advocates for marginalized groups, right? I do that a lot. I do that for a living. It was very hard for me. I mean, more than anybody could imagine, because I love the Dodgers. I mean, and one of the things that frustrated me is all the virtual signaling that was going on with a lot of people that don't have the cultural connection to the Dodgers. And they're saying, well, they shouldn't support the Dodgers. Just don't. And it's like, it's not that easy. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I mean, I've had so many moments of community with the Dodgers. I met some of my closest friends, you know, and it's something that would be a void in my life without, you know, because I miss baseball right now. You know, it's a good little self-care coping skill for me that's not around right now, and it sucks. And so to me, it's more about coming to terms. And me and you talked about this with the Brock Lesnar going to WWE, right? And it's like, it's more just being authentic and coming to terms that it's not something to be proud of. But I cannot, like, not watch the Dodgers. I just can't. It would affect me too much.
Right.
And at the same time, I do understand what they're doing. I do understand that ownership, you know, might have a stake in all these little FEMA camps or whatever they're building, you know, for rotation purposes. And it's just something that I have to come to terms with. But I think it should be, the person should be allowed to internally come to terms with that, you know. I always like to tell everybody, I mean, if anybody that lives in a developed country, you're gonna cash a check in blood. We've all cashed checks in blood, all of us. If you drive a car, if you eat meat, like, it doesn't matter. So there comes a point where we all just have to understand what's right or wrong, and understand that we're human beings, and there are things that we're gonna do that maybe sound hypocritical, but they're a part of our lives, you know, and that's kind of where I'm at. And it's not an easy decision to make.
Carlos says, go Dodgers, and then says, Draven knows this. It wasn't always easy being a Dodgers fan.
No, it wasn't. The Carlos is my buddy. Me and him go way back, and we've gone through a lot of games together. You've met Carlos before.
Yeah, I've met him.
In Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah, hung out.
Yeah, we used to go. We used to have back in the day when it was manageable. We used to have a plan where you get guaranteed opening day and then a few days along the way.
Yeah,
kind of like a mini season plan thing. You can't do that anymore. but it's hard. But I mean, I can't. You know, that's my team, and they represent so much to the community. So, look, and like everything, it's not all black or white either. I mean, there's a lot of like Mookie Betts was doing a lot of community service in November with Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So, yeah.
The Giants are owned, and the guy who kind of runs the show is the son of the owner, but that dude put so much money into the Trump campaign, and this is he bought a team in San Francisco, and a lot of the really ugly stuff from Trump's first term, where, you know, the divisiveness was just out of control. Like, he was way on the right side of that. So being a Giants fan, you're like, oh my gosh, this is who owns us. This is kind of crazy. I do need to shout out some of the Giants side. The detector says, I hate the Dodgers. It's in my blood. I'm with you, man.
But I want some context to that, though. Like, why? Like, I want some. Is it because he's from the Bay Area? Is he in San Diego? What's going on here?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if he's a Giants fan or not. But I can say for me.
Well, I know why you. I mean,
Yeah, and that's what we learn when we are kids, is that the rivalry exists and is a historical thing, and you kind of have to pick sides, and you can't go both ways. I like doing this show with you because you are the same kind of Dodgers fan that I am a Giants fan, but at the same time,
some crash in my eye, I got some dust.
But at the same time, I like knowing about the Dodgers. I like knowing about what's going on in their world. Now, when we sort of decided to do this, I didn't expect you guys to win back-to-back championships. you know, but you guys have been a really good team for a while now, and I like to compare some of the things that you guys are doing with some of the things the Giants can do to improve, because we are, you know, if being honest, we're just chasing you guys right now, and that's kind of what the deal is. So back to the World Series. I think I asked you this last year. Now, you lived through 88.
Yeah.
2020.
Yes.
2024. And now 2025.
And 2017.
Wait, you could say, well, okay, you're counting that one because of the cheating that was going on.
Right.
But what's your favorite, rank the World Series teams or the World Series winning teams to your fandom? Like, is 88 still the number one because that was your,
no, 88, your little kid? 88 became almost like a curse. Like, do you know how many, you know that how tired I was? And Carlos is still listening. He knows that we talked about it. I was tired of seeing that damn Kirk Gibson doing this, you know, like we needed more highlights. And you know what was messed up? Then we had that Julio Urías getting the last out, which kind of became the new highlight. And then he had the whole domestic violence thing. So we kind of had to erase him. He got Chris Benoit from Dodger lore.
Yeah.
And so then we had no highlights again. Then you know what was the closest one we had that to me replaced Kirk Gibson, because I was tired of that, was Steve Finley hitting that home run against you guys back in 04, which is a game that I was at live, and that eliminated the Giants and it punched our ticket to the playoffs. So it's nice. I mean, obviously the Yankees one with Freddie Freeman game one, that one kind of took over. So because of that moment, I'm going to say my favorite moment as far as the World Series that I've been alive in would have been 2024. Because you couldn't write that, man. Freddie Freeman going out there. Remember, he had a bad ankle, just like Gibby.
Oh, yeah.
And he comes out there. He's limping. Just like Gibby, you know, it's a grand slam, home rush. I mean, Gibby wasn't a grand slam, but it was a game winner in game one that completely deflated the A's. And to me, just those parallels, right? Just romanticizing that moment, very poetic moment in Dodger history. You can't beat it. You can't write it. And so that would be my number one. Then I would go 2020. I don't care what the haters say, because I remember talking to you and you were like, you finally got that monkey off your back, you know?
Yeah.
Especially because at that time, not so much now, but at that time, there wasn't enough of a gap for you guys to stop bragging about the every other year thing with the Giants. You guys could still throw that one around. Now it's a little too late. Now we're getting a little distance there.
11 years.
But at this time, 2020, it was still fair play. So to me, it was like, at least we got one, you know? So that was a very special moment. And I was with my friends and it was a big deal. It was also kind of like a pick me up because it was in the middle of COVID. We weren't getting anything live. It was in Arlington, Texas. So yeah, that was a special moment. And then last year's, like a month ago, just magic, because again, we came back, you know. What an amazing World Series. And then of course 88, I remember just the celebration in the neighborhood. Everybody just being so happy, and especially because that was a very scrappy team. That they were not planned to be in the world. You know, the odds were against them and they came through. So that's kind of my rundown there. We'll see about 2026, because there's a good shot we might three-peat. Who knows?
So what's up with Freddie Freeman and these weird injuries? Didn't this dude like slip in the shower last year too and get hurt?
Yeah, he's interesting, man, because he's like the walking wounded when you see him out there. You know, he's like you know, he reminds me of his Terry Funk. You know, he's like, he goes out there and he gives it his all. But then if you go live to the games live, or you see him on TV when he's going back to the dugout, man, he's dragging, man. But then you see him in these wedding videos and he's doing the worm. And it's like, dude, like, are you like, you know, he went viral right after the World Series. Cause he was a Dodger after party when they won it all. And he was doing the worm. And I was like, God damn, just be careful. Like, you know, so who knows? But at this point, I am a little concerned that we are going to have an older team. I think I texted you about this. Mm-hmm. He's going to be 37 next year. He still has 3 years left. You know, and Mookie's younger. Mookie's in his mid-30s, but Mookie's starting to show. He showed a little bit of that wear and tear last year. And we're coming into these guys for a long time, so I don't know what's going to become of that. Are we going to just have them be bats off the bench, which I don't know how disrespectful that would be. We do have some young talent in the waiting in the wings. So, yeah, I'm kind of concerned about us having an older team.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over, paid for by NHTSA.
Mookie had a down year. He was ill. He wasn't even really hurt. He was like ill. And then he played a lot of shortstop, and it sounds like he's going to be the shortstop again, which is really good for just that stability. And he had a really good defensive year, but his offense was down. Do you think any of that had to do with playing shortstop, or was it mostly because he's ill, or is he getting older? Like, what was your thoughts on his down year?
I think it's a little bit of A, B, and C. I think he's getting older. I think playing shortstop has a lot of more wear and tear on your body. You know, it's a very explosive position. You got to be ready at all times. But look, this guy's amazing. And that's one of the things about these athletes, Garrett, is like we forget, because we see them every day. We like the Otanis. Like Otani could, you know, he could hit and he could pitch. A Mookie out of nowhere just decides to be a shortstop, you know, at a major league level. I'm going to be a shortstop. I got a gold glove in right field, you know, and he comes in third place for a gold glove in shortstop. That's how amazing he was in his first year as a shortstop. I mean, these are things that your average person cannot do. But to answer your question, I do think that age, injuries, and just the illness that he had in the beginning of the year where he dropped like 20 pounds really affected his performance. And then later on, because one thing about hitting a baseball is that it's contagious, right? I mean, when you're on a roll, you're hitting every day. And when you're in a slump, it seems like, you know, the baseball's a marble. You can't see it, you know? So I think with him, it also became a confidence issue later on. And one of the things that I really admire about this Dodger team is that how honest they are with the media. You know, Mookie was there cutting promos saying that he's very, you know, he's nobody's harder on himself than him. And if it was about discipline and practice, it's not that, because he's there every day, you know. So you see, you see the pain that he's going through to try and figure out what's happening. He just can't. So I think we'll see the season that he has next year. But yeah, he's definitely the MVP. Mookie, I think, is behind us at this point.
Now, you and I have talked about this in the past, about the Hall of Fame. And so there's now this historical committee. I think it used to be called the Veterans Committee. And it's like, if you don't make it in your time, your 15 years of being on the ballot, then you get this other way to make the
this is more complicated than Dave's Hall of Fame, to be honest with you.
And there was a famous Dodger player, Fernando Valenzuela. Giants had two guys on there, Jeff Kent and Barry Bonds. And of Don Mattingly's on there. Dale Murphy was on there. Mm-hmm. And of all the guys to make the Hall of Fame, Giants and Dodgers player Jeff Kent, which was a surprise. Not that I don't think he is deserving. I think some of it is he played in this era, which it's almost questionable for everybody, but he was actually very anti-steroids. He was just like, test everybody. He said all this stuff after he left the Giants, by the way. Test everybody. we need to fix this problem. And so I was happy to see it happen, but you know, he had the same 15 years that everyone else did. So I was really surprised. What is your relationship and what is Dodger fans' relationship with Jeff Kent?
Well, Jeff Kent is somebody that really kind of connected with the community because he's from here. So he's a guy that, I mean, when they first gave him the jersey to be our second baseman back in 06, I believe, he cried, you know, he's like, this is a dream for me. And he originally had signed, he was doing the gimmick where he was going year by year and he ended up staying 4 years with us. And we went to the NLCS twice with him, lost twice to the Phillies, 08 and 09. So he's somebody that people remember. And he's somebody that people see as somebody. Actually, when he retired, he cried again because he retired as a Dodger. And he said he was going to miss wearing the uniform. And the only thing that I remember with him that always rubbed me the wrong way, first of all, he was a real stick in the mud. Like, he just had no sense of humor, like, at all.
Yeah.
And he went on record and says, like, I don't really even like baseball. I don't watch baseball. I don't, like, when I go home, I just don't want to, like, this guy he was just given the gift by God to play baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he wasn't actually a fan. And that was rubbing me the wrong way. I was like, that's kind of, don't say that, dude, even if you're thinking it. Like, that's kind of messed up. But yeah, that's something I'll never forget. And even in the, because he talked to the media when they made the announcement. You know, he's a little pudgier now, of course. Not he dealt normal level pudgier, but he's pudgier. but he said the same thing. He was like, he talked about how he doesn't really keep up because today's baseball is not the same. But you know, the old man speech, you know,
yeah,
today's baseball is not the same baseball that I grew, you know, so
doesn't put over the, it only puts over his time frame in which he played. And
yes, we see that in all sports and entertainment. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I like Jeff Kent. He contributed good to us. We had some good years with him, and we actually officially had a consistent second baseman for years after he left. So, he was a good quality baseball player. He put over Normar Garciaparra for some reason, even though they only played together for a couple years. That was weird. But yeah, I know him and Barry. Didn't they get into a couple fist fights, or at least one, right?
So there was a argument in the dugout. He said something. Barry put both of his hands around Kent's neck and pushed him into the back of the dugout. And I think that was it. Okay. I think that was the argument. And what's funny is that, so I don't even remember the reason for the argument, you know, that those guys were kind of like oil and water personality. Interestingly, their personalities were very similar because they were both like kind of angry, grouchy kind of guys.
Yes, they're crotchety now.
Yeah, so, but you know, honestly, I'm sure Bonds is still sort of Bonds, but at least his public persona, you could see that he's trying to be a little bit more of like a normal dude. Like he even on his Instagram page, he celebrated Jeff Kent. And he said how proud he was and how happy he was that Jeff made it. So that was really cool. But then when they asked Jeff about Barry, he was still kind of like, well, I don't know. It's not my decision. I didn't have a vote and this and that. And I was like, Jeff, you could have won so many brownie points with this fan base. Because this fan base, the Giants fan base, even though Kent was amazing, won an MVP, they still don't really wrap their arms around him. Like, if you were talking about the top Giants players of the last 25 years, like of a position everyday player, he's probably in like the top six or seven because of how good he was, but probably barely in the top 20 from a perspective of the popularity of the fan base, just because he didn't really like, you know, and he had the whole thing about where he messed up his wrist in spring training. And I think he did it riding his motorcycle and he crashed his motorcycle. And to this day, I still think he says that he slipped washing his truck. Like, just will not admit that he was recklessly goofing off on his motorcycle. So it's just stuff like that where, you know, you kind of I like Jeff Kent, but at the same time, I'm like, gosh, yeah, I just wish this dude was like a better dude, you know? So I think a lot of Giants fans have that. Yeah.
And now, do you think he's gonna? I mean, do you think it goes without saying, or do you think there's a possibility that he goes into the Hall of Fame with a Dodgers uniform?
So he has said that he's going in as a Giant.
Okay, I hadn't heard that yet.
He's Dusty Baker this, Dusty Baker that, and you know, I kind of expected it, but it's not like the Giants were clearly his best years, but he had some other really good years. And
he was with the Mets too as well. Remember, he was with the Mets before the Giants.
I remember when he came up with the Indians, now Guardians. You know, he was a prospect that just didn't necessarily, or you know, he was a younger player who just didn't necessarily do as well as he was supposed to do. And then for whatever reason, Giants traded for him in a very unpopular trade because they sent Matt Williams the other way.
That's right.
Matt Williams was beloved, though now Matt Williams is like angry old man kind of guy. Yes. You know,
well, yeah, he was back then too.
I got a field pass last year, not this past season, but the season before, and was it this year? I think it was the year before. So. Me and my buddy Brad, who does the Thompson and Clark show with me, we were on the field for batting. There wasn't batting practice this day, but it was only fielding practice. I know the guy who he's the audio engineer of the Giants games on KMBR, and he found me because of the stuff I do with Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio. He reached out to me because of that, and then we connected because of the Giants. And so he got us a field pass, and so. There's not much going on because it was like day game after a night game. And then the team. So it's like very few people out there, like some guys pitching on the side. You know, there was a Bob Melvin was doing some stuff. And Matt Williams was just hitting grounders to Matt Chapman. Mm. And so there's not that many people on the field. Like it's us and maybe like a couple other groups of people. And, you know, we're just talking and. Like, we like that stuff. Brad and I both played baseball through high school and after high school. So just the idea of Matt Williams hitting fungos to Matt Chapman was, like, kind of cool to us. And a couple different times, Williams just looked in our direction as if we were bothering him or something, and all we're doing is watching. And the first time I was like, is he mad at us just for being on the field? Like, what is this? And then another time... as they were walking off, he just looks at us again. And I was like, we're just watching them take ground balls. Like, what is his deal? But yeah, he kind of became like the, a little bit of the grumpy guy too. So I don't know.
No, he wasn't licking his sleeves when he was doing the...
No, wiping it with his nose. By the way, did you see that Montreal Expos documentary on Netflix?
I did, of course, with the Carney owner. That was awesome.
And that was the year, that season, Matt Williams was on pace to break Roger Maris before Mark McGwire did it, you know, a few years late after that. He was on pace. It was close. Some days he was over the pace, some days he was under the pace, but before they went on strike, he was right there, you know, with the possibility of getting to that number. So that would have been an interesting thing, but as we know, the season did not happen. Yeah, the World Series did not happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions with that season, unfortunately. But yeah, the Expos, they were contenders that year, and they were the favorites, actually. But I was going to ask you, did you see the A-Rod documentary?
Not yet. I haven't. Did you watch it?
Of course, man. And
is it good?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And he kind of worked me a little bit. I was after the documentary, I'm like, maybe this guy needs to be in the Hall of Fame, you know. But again, when you get those kind of documentaries, just the emotional bias is going to kind of make you think that way.
Oh yeah.
But he was very humble and apologetic and honest. Because it reminded me to ask you about that, because that's something Barry Bonds is not. And I think that's what the reason
he almost just never talks about it.
Well, he's gone on record as saying that if he gets inducted, he's not going to show up. But he's saying, you know, just because I guess, you know, he's got such a high opinion of himself that it's like, no, now they're hurting me, my feelings. I ain't going if they induct me, even though he's never going to be inducted, it looks like, because we saw what happened with this new committee or whatever. But with A-Rod, yeah, again, you know, 162 games. I mean, you know the story. It was, I mean, he got overly punished to be made an example of. Even I thought, even back then, I thought that was very unfair, because everybody else that came out in that list got like 62 games and he got 106. He got a whole season. But yeah, very interesting. Check it out when you have the chance, for sure.
I have this interesting relationship with A-Rod because, I mean, he and Barry are kind of, on the cheaters aspect, they're on like the Mount Rushmore of it, even though so many other guys did the exact same thing that they did. They just excelled and broke records while doing it, so that puts them on this Mount Rushmore. But I remember when he came up, I was such a fan of his. And then once he went to Texas, remember, he took all that money to go to Texas when there were some of the better teams who wanted him, but he took the most money he could possibly get. And Texas wasn't good. And so there was a little bit of a weird thing there where I think reputationally he took a little bit of a hit. And then there was the conversation of him going to Boston, and then he didn't go to Boston, and then he went to New York. And was he going to push Jeter out of his spot? And Jeter's like, he ain't pushing nobody out of nobody's spot. Like, there was some like acrimonious relationship there. But he has actually gone on record as saying, if Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame, why are the players the ones who are taking it, taking the punishment? Because Bud Selig was the whole guy in charge when all this stuff happened. And so it's under his watch, yet he didn't get punished. And all the players who, you know, made the sport so much money are the ones who got punished, which is, if there is an argument, that is a solid argument, I think. But
that's more but to me, that's more an argument as to why Bob Selig shouldn't be in, not for everybody to be in, you know.
But,
so there's a difference there.
And the other thing, though, is it's basically saying you writers, you people who vote, you guys are hypocrites, because what Alex is really saying is Bud Selig knew and didn't do anything about it because the popularity was at an all-time high.
Yeah,
that's what he's really saying without saying it. And so if Bud was in on the thing, then, you know, there's some manipulation going on there. And but, you know, Bud Selig is actually still alive, by the way. I was doing Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave, and we were talking about this subject. And I was like, and I had said that I thought Bud had died. And then we were talking, and then I did a quick Wikipedia search.
No, he's
and I had to apologize to Bud on air for saying that he was gone. He's not. I think he's in his like upper 80s or something like that.
You didn't want to be a gorilla monsoon to a superstar Billy Graham, huh?
not when I have the internet right at my fingertips.
No, yeah, you're right though. I don't know. Again, that's another topic that really I'm conflicted on. You know, I get so angry. I get so angry because, and again, nobody really knows, even in today's players, right? I mean, everybody does stuff. You got money. There's stuff that can be detected, but let's just go under the assumption that everybody's clean today, which I think it's a logical assumption, but who knows? Like when I see Ohtani, right? Ohtani or Aaron Judge or Kyle Raleigh this year, like you can't get excited because they're never going to hit 74 home runs. You know, it makes me angry because it's like, you robbed us of these moments. Like you robbed us. But then again, the old argument still stands. Like, you could juice all you want, that doesn't teach you to make contact with the ball. You know, you still have to have, we talked earlier, that exit velocity, the launch angle.
Yeah.
I mean, Barry Bonds is still one of the greatest players. Some would say the greatest player. It's interesting with Barry Bonds. A lot of people from his generation, a lot of players from his generation say he's the greatest ball player of all time. You know,
And, AEW wrestler Anthony Bowens thinks he's the greatest player of all time, too.
Well, that didn't help him get over, brother.
Anthony Bowens is a big Giants fan. I've reached out to him a couple times because he's been looking for some Bonds cards. And I have a lot of Bonds stuff. And I was like, dude, just shoot me your address. I'll send you a couple cards.
Yeah, that's cool. So, which is weird because he's an East Coast New York guy, I think, right? He's from the Northeast. But maybe there's a lot of Giants fans over there because they used to be over there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like Ohtani should have been breaking all kinds of records, Aaron Judge, but whatever. It didn't happen. Let's get over it and move on. Same thing with the Astros cheating. We just got to get over it.
That's a hard one, though. I'm surprised. Like that one would rub me the wrong way probably until my last day, man.
Yeah, well, that's why I was happy that that Springer didn't get another ring, because I was like, nah, not a second go wrong with this guy, with this cheater.
All right, let's bring it to today. The hot stove season, winter meetings are happening. The baseball lottery happened today. The Giants moved all the way up from the 12th pick to the 4th pick. So maybe Lady Luck is changing.
The White House got the number one pick.
Yes, deservedly so, because they've been terrible. Yes. You, like I said, you guys signed Edwin Diaz, and part the cynic in me says that, I don't know, man, it hasn't been great signing previous years, really the best closer in baseball for you guys. But at the same time, because of what we just said, you have the funds to sprinkle in all of these different areas to try and make up for some mistakes like Tanner Scott. And who knows, maybe Tanner Scott bounces back. Maybe being the eighth inning left-handed arm is a much easier job. You know, maybe under the bright lights of being on the Dodgers. And, you know, I think they're saying that he had maybe some physical stuff maybe that kind of got unnoticed or whatever. Whatever it is the case, he had a bad year. And now you're doing it again. You go after the best closer on the market. You can. It looks like maybe he even took less money to come to the Dodgers. So good for him.
No, it was Steve Cohen was giving him $63 million over 3 years. Dodgers upped it by $3 million. And plus, you want to win a championship. You know, Dodgers have that proven record.
No deferment? He's not getting paid until 2065?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. That's a whole other conversation. I'm worried about that too, actually. But let's tackle a couple of subjects here really quick. Just go back and forth. One of them is this idea, because the way you insinuated is that we just throw money at problems. That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is that we actually have developed some talent to you know, carry some of the late innings. We got some pretty good prospects that are there. I mean, Roki Sasaki is still there, even though he wants to be a starter. But I do feel like Andrew Friedman and management want to make it clear that they're investing, because again, after the 2026 season, you know, with the lockout, who knows? But I think they want to go on record as showing that they're investing so much money back into the team. Right, they want to do it with their actions, something that a lot of these teams are not doing, and mm-hmm. that's going to be the main defending point when it comes to these talks. Right, it's like is a salary cap ain't going to do nothing if the owners are still pocketing all the money, mm-hmm. And so that's what's happening now, and there's been a lot of stats on the internet showing like how much money the Marlins owner pockets, for example, the Pirates owner, like they there's revenue sharing in baseball. Everybody's mm-hmm. making money. It just depends how much you put back into the team. So I think the Dodgers are doing that. I think that they've been doing that, which is why I have no problem with our management, because it really shows that they treat the sport with dignity and respect. And to the point of why Edwin decided to come to LA instead of taking, you know, getting the $63 million in New York, where he's already established, and I'm sure he's got a little more stroke in New York. He's been there for a while. It's because the Dodgers have also created a culture of treating the sport with respect and dignity. I mean, they invested $100 million in rebuilding the visiting clubhouse and making it a state-of-the-art facility. You know, so that players, when they come and play at Dodger Stadium, they're like, I wouldn't mind playing here every day. You know, their development team is amazing. You know, the way they develop players. One of the things that I didn't like is how much they stockpile talent and they didn't make any moves during the offseason, the trade deadline last year. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why are you stockpiling all these rookies or all these minor leaguers when we could afford to give some up to contend right now? You know, but Friedman said, you know what? I built this team, so I didn't have to do that. I built it in the beginning. So it worked out in the end.
His whole thing was, I want to use the offseason to build the bullpen so we don't have to trade any of our prospects for bullpen arms come the deadline. Like, we should be set. But the injuries, there were so many injuries that you guys had to deal with that the plan didn't work out. And by the way, I want to say, when I said you guys have money to fix problems, it's not just the ability to it's a depth thing, right? The my co-host Brad says this all the time, which is, in baseball, you're not building a 5-man starting rotation. What you're really doing is you're building a 10-man starting rotation, because so many guys are going to get hurt during the season, and you have to be able to bring in arms, whether they're in AAA or whether they're coming up and you have to put them on the 40-man and maybe they're really long relievers. You have to build this depth. And what you guys can do from the starting pitching perspective and the bullpen perspective is, this guy doesn't work out. Well, we have this other dude who throws 98, and maybe he's not the best pitcher, but for one inning or for three batters, maybe that 98-mile-per-hour fastball is really all that we need. Like you mentioned Will Klein. Will Klein was able to come into the game when everyone's kind of tired, and he's just coming in so fired up and so hot. His stuff is dancing, and the Blue Jays are just, they didn't really have a chance. Like, that is what that allows you to do. Yeah, you guys draft for that too, but you also build your team with the idea of, we're going to spend buku bucks on Blake Snell, Yamamoto, and Glasnow. But then we're going to have these other guys who are young or cheap, or maybe the reclamation projects. They just getting out of Tommy John surgery 3 years ago. And we're going to have these guys at the end, knowing that Blake Snell is going to crack his fingernail and be out for 2 months.
That's right. I agree with you there.
But then you have a guy to come in, and that's really what today's pitching staffs are. And the best managers, they manage the bullpen in a way where, you know, your top dog is out. Well, we may not be able to get seven innings of that type, but we're going to get 4 innings here and 3 innings here and still be close enough to give our teams a chance to win baseball games. And that's what you guys do very well. And it helps to have the financial to do that, but also it's kind of the way that you guys build your team. And that's what I hope Buster, as he's studying the teams that are doing things, like, he's taking a little bit from the Brewers, because he knows he doesn't have these crazy boppers, and he's also playing home games in a park that is not easy for guys to hit a lot of home runs, and trying to improve the fundamentals. And whenever you can add speed and smarter base running, you want to do that. But also, let's look at how the Dodgers build out their starting rotation and their bullpen, and let's take from there. Let's learn how they do it. Because for now, 2 years in a row, you've had to go through a regular season and three playoff series with the same amount of roster spots as everybody else, and you guys have been able to get through it for the last 2 years and win two World Series. Like, that is impressive, and that is coming from somebody who hates the Dodgers.
Well, I appreciate you putting us over like that. But I will say that one of the things that's concerning is this new culture that's being created. And one of the things about baseball, as you've seen over the last 15, 20 years, is that when something works, everybody adapts to it. And it's a little frustrating because you lose the individuality of every manager and every team. I'm not digging this idea of, because Rob, one of the reasons why we only got 95 wins, besides Tanner blowing 10 of them and the bullpen blowing another 10, was that Roberts just decided to punt games early on with the strategy of saving the Blake Snells, the Glasnows in the back end. Like, you know, we had Tony Gonsolin starting, we had Dennis May starting, we had Kershaw starting in the first half of the season. and you know, they just didn't have it, right? They were middle of the road pitchers at this point. Even Kershaw, as much as we respect them, or I respect them, and so that strategy is a little concerning, because Roberts did say that that was a strategy. He was like, we're saving Blake Snell, you know, and now all of a sudden we have this culture where starting pitchers are only expected to pitch after July, right? And it concerns me a little bit, because yeah, you're gonna win World Series trophies with it, but then how? What are we gonna start, like, all of a sudden just having pitchers throw in September? Like, where does this end? You know, it was a little frustrating. Glasnow, who according to Jeff Passan is on the market unofficially. Mm-hmm. He's never pitched more than 130 innings a year ever since he's been a major leaguer. I think it's going on 7 years. You know all about Blake's now. The guy, you know, he's a late starter, you know, and if he's very an iffy pitcher, you know.
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of the pitcher that the Blue Jays just overpaid for. What's his name?
Dylan Cease.
Yeah, I see, like, he's like a younger Blake Snell. Like, well, Blake Snell was 2-3 years ago, and it's like, I wouldn't invest in that, because Blake Snell, he's amazing when he's on, but sometimes, but he walks a lot of people. You know
what's funny is, I thought when they signed Cease, I was like, okay, Cease is a poor man's Glasnow who's going to get paid like a rich man's Glasnow. That's what I thought. But, you know, yeah, you're 100%. It's you're not paying for performance as much as you are paying for innings these days when it comes to starting pitching. Because if you think about it, like, by the way that baseball used to work, like, let's say Steve Carlton, let me bring a name from the old days. You know, Steve Carlton was throwing 280 to 300 innings a year, winning 20 games, striking out 250 guys a year. Like, imagine if you had that today, like, he'd be the highest paid player in baseball just because he gives you innings and results. And today, if you get Blake to go five and Blake doesn't have his great stuff, and maybe he comes out of the game and you're down 3-1, well, that's only four innings for the bullpen. You still have a chance to come back if you have a good offense. Like, that's how they look at it. Now, if you get someone like Yamamoto, who's going to go seven, and he's going to give up two, and your team is so confident that they just have to score three or four runs when he pitches, and you're going to win. Like, that's what an ace is today. Same with the Giants and Logan Webb. Like, Logan Webb led the league in innings pitched and strikeouts last year, and this dude's a sinker ball pitcher. Yeah. But because he's every 5 days, he was able to add up enough strikeouts to lead all of the league in strikeouts. So, you know, those guys are your top level guys. Can Dylan Cease be a Yamamoto or a Logan? I don't think so. I mean, in some starts, he'll look like the second coming, and then in other starts, he'll go three or four innings and give up five runs and walk, six guys.
Just like Snell.
How is it the same guy? Yeah.
He's a carbon copy of Snell in a lot of ways, except he's maybe more accountable than Snell, you know, because now he'll give you all the excuses in the book, except that he had a bad day. But yeah, it's going to be interesting what happens with the starting pitcher. I do want to ask you some questions about the Giants now, because I feel like the Giants, I texted you this, I think they have like a top three, maybe top five infield when it comes to not only like offensive numbers and stuff like that. You said they don't have the horses. They lack depth. I think they have a Robbie Ray. They had Logan Webb. I think those are some two quality starters. Where do you see? You said they didn't have depth. What do you mean by that?
So when you get past, so obviously Verlander was their number three starter, and then their four and five were guys on the younger side of things who had never really pitched long into the season, because, you know, a lot of these pitchers these days, and you see this with the Dodgers, they don't push them to throw much because they don't want to waste the innings out of their arm. So then when they get to the big leagues, they're comfortable going three or four, but when you stretch them further, that's kind of when they get hurt. And so the Giants had a couple of kids, Landon Roop, Hayden Birdsong, who were there. So Hayden Birdsong, there were moments where you're like, oh man, like, this guy's actually the real deal. And then you get to midseason, and all of a sudden he can't throw strikes. And you're like, well, why is that? And some of it is just the pressure, I'm sure, of being in the big leagues. Some of it is
fatigue.
He didn't really have the – he never had to throw this hard for this long. And then you go, okay, well, has this screwed him for his career? Now is he, like, just mentally psyched out? And post – after that, it's like, well, who do you have? Well, they had a couple of guys in the minors who could come up but not consistent. And so – they were really dependent. They basically, what they did is they just overtaxed their bullpen. It's like, okay, starting pitcher, you don't got to worry about these 3 days. If you get Webb and Ray and Verlander, we can go light on the bullpen. But these next 2 days, just be ready to pitch because you're going to have to throw many multiple innings in some cases. And so their young closer who made the All-Star team, Randy Rodriguez, blows out his elbow. They traded Camilo Doval and Tyler Rogers at the deadline. And this was Buster thinking that, well, we need to get younger. We need to get more athletic. We have an outside shot at making the playoffs, but it doesn't look great. So he decided to trade those arms. And so now, you know, as down the stretch, they got guys coming out of the bullpen that you have to be a real, real sports fan to know who these guys are. And, you know, they did a pretty good job because the Giants made a nice little run there at the end. Of course, as I said at the beginning of the season, they were going to go 81.
They did. It stopped when they ran into us.
So that is, you know, that's the thing is how do you well, how do you build into the infrastructure to where you have, you know, six or seven dependable starters. And maybe you really have to invest and think of it in that way. But the Giants did not have that last year. So when they ran out of guys and it was really bad. And I hope that they look at that a little bit closely and it's like, okay, yeah, we have these other arms. They may not be ready by April, but they'll be ready by July when we really need them. And then you can plug them in and extend the shelf life of your starting rotation and not tax the bullpen. But they were not able to do that last year. So I just hope that there's a little bit of an understanding and a change in philosophy around that. Cause as you guys and as the Blue Jays showed, like the Blue Jays bring in the kid, Yesavage, who he hadn't pitched in, I think above A ball or something. And that dude was awesome. So sometimes you need the luck of that too. Like that guy
years
comes
old,
up.
He looks for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a little bit of a lag. One of the things he was kind of like a throwback of those old players that were like 22 and they looked like 32. He reminded me of one of those guys from back in the day. So I have another question for you. What we talked a little bit about Tony Vitello, right? And you had and I know you've already analyzed Tony Vitello. I'm sure you've already analyzed it on this show, but I do wonder because you kind of feel that he's got a lot to prove. He maybe not be the right fit for this team. He's used to just managing a bunch of young kids, which is a different strategy. Do you still feel that way, or is it still a concern for you?
The media, the sports media out here, they are attracted to the power of personality. And he has that. He's got that power of personality. Very likable guy, great public speaker, makes you think that, okay, if I was playing, I could play for this guy. And I think that's great. That's a positive. What I want to see is when Rafi Devers is in a slump, and you know he's 0-15 and he's struggling and Vitello's trying to give him, you know, some information about something, like how Rafi Devers takes that. Is the fact that Vitello was a great college coach, does that mean anything to a Rafi Devers? How does the veterans in the clubhouse think about more of like the rah-rah power of personality guy. Now, the Giants are going to have some a strong coaching staff because they were, you know, they just hired Ron Washington, who was a big league manager, and he's literally
awesome.
He's literally there to be a bench coach, and he's literally there to help out with the infield. And they got Bochy, they got Dusty Baker as like advisors, so they're always going to be around. So he's going to have a lot of help. But do you know FP Santangelo?
Yeah, of course, man. That's a throwback right there. Yeah.
So FP Santangelo is a broadcaster out here, still has very close ties to the Giants. And he actually has one of the better Giants podcasts out there called Splash Hit. And he was saying he managed in A-ball for, I think he said for one season, with Sanse Giants. So it's the team that I grew up watching, my local minor league. And he was saying that when he realized on the field how quickly he had to make decisions, it was like overwhelming. Like, you know, you watch the game, like us, like we know the game, we're calling out stuff as we see it, because, you know, we're smart baseball fans. But he was saying when he was actually in the dugout, the amount of information that he had to process and communicate out was so fast that it was overwhelming. And I think the college game is probably pretty fast, but the pro game is going to be a different level for him. So how does he adapt to that? And can he, because the Giants really do need to show some success early in the season, or the fans are just going to be like, all right, we're out. Last year was a great year for the park, for the fan base. Like the attendance grew a decent amount. I'm not actually sure why, honestly. It could be because they invested in Chapman, they invested in Adames, Jung-Hoo Lee was back, so they did put some money into the players. But this is also an area where they're like, you know, we're in as long as it's fun, but, you know, we can walk down the street and go to an art museum or go to like a five-star restaurant, right, like if we want. How are we prioritizing the Giants versus everything else that goes on out here? So I do think that they need to have some early success in order to set the tone, because if they don't, I think it could be, from a fan perspective, it could be a little frustrating. But I think the public persona of who Vitello is with the fans, with the media, it's been very positive. I just need to see it in real time, because, you know, the rah-rah stuff works for some people, but the knowledge and the X's and O's and really the understanding of the players and having those strong relationships is kind of what counts. And we'll see how that happens. It's not like, to put it in perspective, it's not like in the NBA, right? When you had the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, you're like, man, these are two of the best players in the league. Why are they not taking the Lakers to the NBA Finals? And you go, oh, well, we got the witch doctor, Phil Jackson, coming in, and that's what we kind of need. And he's just like, you know, he's doing nothing but psychology for these guys. And then they win three titles in a row. It's not like you have that necessarily in baseball. And so there's like a little bit of an adapting time where the team's got to get used to a new guy again. And Bob Melvin was only here for 2 years. So there are players who are like, oh, yeah, we were dealing with Gabe Kapler. Now we're dealing with Bob Melvin. Now we're dealing with another guy. So it's that kind of thing where, you know, there's going to be some time period. And I hope that he kind of just is like he game one, he just goes and he's just, you know, brings to the table what he does best and the Giants take to it. But there's also this alternate universe where Rafael Devers is like, okay, dude, quit talking. I just need to hit this baseball. And so we'll see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, but one of the things that as I'm hearing they did build a veteran coaching staff around him. You know, you have Ron Washington, you have Dusty Baker, you have Bruce Bochy. And I think that was very intentional. I think they understand that he's young, wet behind the ears, but he's got potential. They like how he connects with the city, which is always good for a city like San Francisco. And so they almost see this as an investment, maybe to pay off, you know, 2-3 years down the line. But as he gets there, he's going to have a lot of experience around him, you know. Somebody like a Devers could go, Ron Washington could put out that flame, you know, because he's been around for years and he's a veteran presence there. So I think there's some potential there. Not enough to take us out, of course, but I think I think as long as we have the team that it's gonna sound like I'm bragging, but I'm just being realistic. I think as long as we have the team that we have and we're healthy, the National League West is very much gonna be focused on who could get the wild card spots. I'll be honest with you, because it just seems that the Dodgers are too good. And you know, we got Diaz today. We need a left fielder. Once we get Conforto's spot all settled in, we're gonna be good to go again. You know. And the rumors, Cody Bellinger coming back home, as Vince McMahon used to tell the wrestlers, well, we need you back home. That's what we're telling Cody Bellinger. You know, because I don't think we want to invest in the upper tier outfielders right now, and the Kyle Tuckers of the world. But I think somebody like Bellinger would be a good fit, and I think we'll be in a good spot to compete next year and defend our title. Our titles, really, because we got two of them back to back.
Get Jock Peterson to come home too.
No, I don't know, man. He's he gets plummier by the year too.
All right, let's end this discussion. Yeah. Let's end it with this question. So there are still free agency is very early on. Who were the two perfect players, money be damned, one pitcher and one hitter that the Dodgers can add where you would be like, oh my gosh, this is like a Christmas present for me.
Diaz and Tucker, and we already got one. So
Diaz would be the guy.
Because of the Tanner Scott nightmare that only Dodger fans understand. I mean, when this guy was coming in, there was heart attacks, you know, all over the city of LA. And to piggyback on that, so Andrew Friedman, he did make a lot of mistakes. Think about it. He brought in Kirby Yates, complete flop. He brought in Tanner Scott, $72 million for 4 years. Big investment. And nobody, the thing that people don't understand about relievers is that you never see a reliever. They are the players that you see move around a lot, you know? Like Aronis Chapman, great ball player, possibly Hall of Fame level ball player, reliever. And he's been like to 10 teams at this point because relievers are so unpredictable. You know, they could have a great season 1 year. They could have a bad season the next. That's just the life of relief pitcher. That's the reason why they're not starters. So to invest $72 million on Tanner Scott, and there's a rumor that the only reason why Tanner Scott got $6 million was because he owned Otani in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and they didn't want Otani facing him, so they just paid him to join the team. But he was someone that was a complete flop. We talked about Michael Conforto, $17 million for a year. And a complete flop. There was a lot of mistakes that were done, but we had the guns and the horses to kind of make up for that, which a lot of teams don't, right? A lot of teams, they could only afford one flop. We had three. It's interesting to think about it that way. But, yeah, to answer your question, it would be Diaz and Tucker. We already got Diaz. If we get Tucker, the whole baseball world's going to collapse on us, I think.
I think so, too. I think Tucker the same way for any hitter. I think he would actually fix offensively and defensively the problems that the Giants have. Now I'm seeing $460 million as the prediction for what he gets. That knocks the Giants out of it. But from a pitcher perspective, the guy that I want is Framber Valdez because he's like the left-handed version of Logan Webb. And there was that that video last year of him purposely crossing up his catcher. I don't know if you remember seeing that, but he
I saw it, of course. I saw it. He got a lot of heat for it.
And so like there's like this there's a subset of fans who are like, no, they can't have a guy like that because you don't want him to, you know, there's a trust thing and his catcher can't trust him, and catchers are gonna be in the back of their mind thinking that he's gonna screw me up purposely to hurt me. And so maybe that you take a few dollars off of him, but those would be the two guys. I don't think the Giants get any of them, but you got your number one on the pitching side. So that was nice for you. And the Giants are going to have to do some bullpen stuff too, because they have zero closers right now. They don't even have a guy that I would be comfortable putting in the eighth inning right now. So they got some work to do.
So the kid that blew out his elbow, I mean, he's not coming back next season.
I mean, maybe he could come back towards later.
Okay, so you got Tommy John is what you were saying, because you didn't specify on the injury. I'm sorry. I guess I should just assume Tommy John. Okay, so yeah, that's a year out. That's a year off. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. I know we have been talking about doing this. I'm glad we're finally able to do it. I know we got to do something else on the other website for the Observe This to end our 1984, but this was fun. This was fun, and we will chime in again maybe around the time. You know what, when we should talk? I don't know how much World Baseball Classic you're going to watch, but I love the World Baseball Classic. Maybe we chit-chat around that time again.
We'll see, because I don't want Ohtani in it.
Well, he's going to play. But not only is he going to play,
but management does not want him to play.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine. But what about Yamamoto and Sasaki?
I don't know about them, but they've been – it's not rumors or scuttlebutt. Roberts has said to the media, I don't want this guy playing in the World Baseball Classic. So it's an open secret that management does not want him to play. As far as Yamamoto, I wouldn't want Yamamoto to play. I think he – damn near, I don't know. I just don't want him to go out his arm. You know, that concerns me. I know he's got those wacky stretches and he doesn't lift weights and he's got the whole thing that I'm sure other players are going to start doing from now on. But I wouldn't be comfortable with him. I don't want anybody in my Dodger team to play in the WBC. I want them to be at full power for the season. But Will Smith's already going to be in Team USA. They already announced that. So he's going to.
It's such an awesome series, though. I love it. All right, that's gonna be it for here. I want to thank Draven for hanging out, and you know, he's in a good mood these days because of his baseball team. So I hope next year he's in not as good of a mood, but we'll see. But all right, that is it from here. So for Draven, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Kachava's All-in-One Whole Body Shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Try their newest flavors, like the limited edition Chocolate Mint. With Kachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code NEWS for 15% off.